Andy Bungie's Zoom.
Good morning, Leonie. How are you?
I'm okay. I've not been very well this week.
I'm sorry, it's wonderful to hear your voice again. Did the Lurgy strike?
The Lurgy struck.
Thank you for braving it, and I hope you're sort of on the tail end of it now. A little while ago,
I.
you had a big IT problem at, well, at TfL, and then before that at City Hall. How's that going?
Oh, it's the same thing, and it's been because of the countermeasures that they've taken that we've had the real problems, because they have fairly successfully, I think, stopped most of the incursion, shall I say. But the methods that they've adopted to stop it have actually massively impacted everyone's ability to work, but it's sort of gradually improving. I mean, at one point we couldn't attach to any external websites, and all this kind of thing. So, and if you work remotely, it was almost impossible to get onto all the systems. So there we go. But yeah, so it's all been good fun, I suppose, if you like that. I think they've arrested somebody.
And it was a very young chap, wasn't it, the case of the TfL hacking? I presume it was perhaps just a fence for a wider operation.
I think he was a 14-year-old boy from Walsall or something. I don't
Yeah. I wonder if that might be a cue to think about Julian Assange at the Council of Europe this week. I just see Graham arriving here. I think you've had fairly assertive views about Mr. Assange's activities, but his take, as you might expect, is rather different, and his speech talked about the exposure of various wrongdoings by governments, including a malpractice on the battlefield, for example, in the Iraq War, and the fact that he feels that Pompeo went after him from the get-go. But in terms of the legacy of all this, we have a UK journalist who is. Has recently been under house arrest for her reporting of the Palestinian cause. We live in different times in terms of the impact of civil liberties on the way in which information can flow, be hacked into for whatever reason, and also censured. So I'm wondering how you feel about all that now, Leonie.
I still have no time at all for Julian Assange. So I think he's a self-serving narcissist, and he has done whatever he felt like doing, both in his personal life and in his hacking activities, and then just uses, tries to dress it up as if he's some sort of, warrior, releasing information, or whatever he does in some way is justified, and I have no time for him at all.
So, regardless of what has been uncovered by this means, and one thinks also of the offshore investments of certain politicians over in the Cayman Islands and whatnot, you feel that the means deployed is a step too far.
In all aspects of his life, yes.
Graham, good morning to you. We started talking about Julian Assange, who was addressing the Council of Europe this week, and I'm wondering if you take Leone's view that he got what was coming to him because he just stepped a little bit too far, as it were, outside what you might conceivably think of as the Constitution, as the appropriate cyber constitution that keeps us all safe.
Yeah, I think he doesn't understand, the damage that he's doing. And if he did, then he would be guilty as charged. So I think I agree with Leonie in the sense that he dresses it up as something that he doesn't realize the boundary that he has to stop. I mean, I think it's right for him to give information that people do need to know, the powers of the Secret Services, but not the details that can damage the country. It's exactly what the Secret Services are for, is to prevent the society being undermined.
I suppose what he would say is that the undermining was coming from those sort of bad actors that he uncovered. For example, the extent of somewhat illicit or questionable offshore investment by people to evade paying, I presume, paying their UK taxes, and some of the nature of operations in the field of war that otherwise we might not know about through conventional means. What are the implications for investigative journalism in general of this? Do you feel that he stymied that too?
Well, yeah, I think that's the damage he did, is that everyone else got tarred with the same brush. And countries around the world decided that journalists were fair game, which has done, untold damage, including the number of journalists killed in Palestine.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Because we now seem to have reached a point where journalists are sort of key targets for I suppose the prevention of the uncovering of certain activities that just go in ad hominem and take them out. Now, obviously, that's a controversial statement, but it is happening, and these targets appear to be in full sight of, say, the Israeli Defense Force. So that in effect, journalism has become a sort of a crime to that extent, and what some people would regard as a sort of Orwellian prospect.
Well, the Thatcher case, when she tried to stop, what's his name, publishing stuff that was deemed secret. And his defense, which got him off, was that it was in the public interest for the public to know. But that is the decision that he made. And Assange has made the decision, and he made the wrong decisions, many of them. He just published everything wholesale. And said everything is a bit like Truss, and not Truss, Elon Musk, saying that people should be allowed to say whatever they like, and that he doesn't understand what freedom of speech is. He thinks it's just the person who's got the biggest megaphone.
I wonder actually only what freedom of speech is in the current climate. I mean, you're both arguing that Assange has done immense damage to it. I hear views to the contrary, but I hear what you're saying and I hear the rationale of what you're saying.
Well, it's a question of just distinguishing between what is in the public interest and what isn't. And you can't tell the difference, nor can Musk.
Because we don't, what we still don't have in terms of the post-Leveson is any kind of overseeing of press freedom other than internally. And Assange describes himself in terms of plea bargaining admitted to being a shall we say a rogue journalist, somebody who committed the crime of journalism.
Yeah, well, that's misinterpreting and misjudging journalism. Good
Well,
journalism
indeed.
is what public is those who publish something in the public interest. If it's against the public interest, it shouldn't be published. Obviously, I mean, it's self-defining, isn't it?
So what
I
you're
mean,
saying is,
journalism
well, yeah,
is
kind of, but I mean, in terms of, I know all your caveat concerns about the way in which social media has developed, what needed to happen was for concepts of freedom of speech and fair expression to evolve with these media. Would you concur with that, Leonie? And how can we make up lost ground in that we are where we are?
Well, we have this problem that social media is completely unregulated in a way that print media, we expect things that are published in print media to have some relationship with the truth.
Despite
And
the
if,
existence of the Sun and some would say the Daily Mail,
well,
which would be neither noble organ.
but they have been taken to, to task over untruths, all of the print media, and been forced to publish retractions to say, oh, the article that we printed 3 days ago or a week ago where we said this, we've it's wrong. Whereas in social media, I'm talking about Elon Musk, it's not just the person with the loudest megaphone. He's also, like Donald Trump, alternative facts. And he just tells,
Alternative facts, yeah.
or as I prefer to call them, lies. I mean, Trump just tells lies. The people who surround him tell lies. Elon Musk, who apparently supports Trump, also just tells lies. And Assange also has tried to dress up what he's done by pretending it's journalism, and it's not. He's just been a hacker, and has just put so much stuff into the public domain. He couldn't possibly have read it all first because he just got hold of it and shoved it all out there.
Well,
And
he's got a
then
team, hasn't he?
afterwards, has tried to say, oh, it's it, as Graham was saying, oh, it's in the public interest. Well, how could he possibly have known whether it was in the public interest or not? He just published everything he got hold of. So he's just a hacker. He's not a journalist. And he's
Just,
then tried to pretend to be a journalist afterwards.
I was talking the other day to, actually a few weeks ago, actually, about the time of the riots here. To Andrew Feinstein, who stood up against Starmer and Hoban and St. Patrick, St. Pancras, I keep saying St. Patrick for some reason. His day job is running a small investigative journalism team talking about the arms industry and some of its unusual practices in terms of its relationship to defense contracting and military policy in various countries. And he said to me that people will, particularly in retirement or at forks in the road, will simply come up and talk because they feel that there's that they will be given a fair hearing. And I'm wondering, although Feinstein is one of many who do a fine job in some people's opinion in this sort of department, and to release uncomfortable truths, where there is something in that building of a relationship of trust that is generally absent in modern society. Perhaps because of the existence of social media, that there are other ways of going at this.
Yeah,
Yeah, they.
I think relationships of trust have broken down in many ways. I think that's true.
So,
Yeah, is it?
is that a social problem as much as a problem in the media?
I think partly it's because of social media. I mean, a lot of people use social media for their social interface these days. And if it's part of the thing that leads to childhood obesity is because people are spending so much time with their screens and so much less time, running around at a playground, and much less time chatting with their friends and much more time interacting with their friends online.
Hence your perhaps your 14-year-old keyboard warrior.
Clearly someone who's spent far too much time online. And it's not helping people. Hence the, I think, the epidemic that seems to be breaking out of people with mental health problems all the time, because we are social animals and we weren't made to interface everything through electronic devices. I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's good.
This, I suppose, is also a legacy of COVID, isn't it? Where people were in silo, free to form their own views about what was going on for one thing, but also what else might be going on.
Well, COVID really didn't help that process at all. I think you're absolutely right.
No. Here's a sidebar. Has Boris Johnson been spending too much time in front of his computer at the moment? Because he's just released his autobiography. It's called something like "I Was Robbed," isn't it, Gov?
Have no
To
interest in.
coincide with something called the Tory Party conference.
I have no interest in Boris Johnson at all.
I'm sorry to mention it this time of the morning, but what I find curious is that he the review in the Guardian suggests Truss is given actually is completely ignored by Johnson's book are still on the case and defending a period of time, some would say rather vaingloriously.
Well, I don't know why. I mean, I think this is not the first volume of his autobiography. I think it's in bits. Is this not just the latest? The
People may
latest.
be buying it and rendering it into bits, I suppose, yes, for
Well,
PG consumption.
I mean, this is just a he's just after money, isn't he? So, it's all follow the money.
But he was, he too was a journalist and would still describe himself as one.
Yes, and he too was a stranger to the truth as well. I mean, he was the original "I went to Brussels and told lies about the EU" journalist, wasn't he? You know, he just made stories up. So again, you know, he describes himself as a journalist. And I think even when he was the mayor of London, he was getting paid £800,000 to write columns for the Spectator and the Tory Graph. You know, I mean, you know, he's had millions and millions and millions of pounds. Was amongst our worst prime ministers ever. Has obviously been a dreadful husband and is probably an awful father.
A proudly dreadful husband. Yep. Yeah.
You know. He's a very oh, I don't really want to talk about Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
And I certainly won't be reading his autobiography.
Well, I think you've seemed to have covered an awful lot of the 756 pages very, very pellucidly there, Leonie. Leonie is saying a narcissist. Many people say a buffoon, who someone doesn't quite get the external view, the optics of what he's saying and doing. Graham, how long has he got in this vein, or is there something in our global character that actually is quite happy to indulge these people?
Well, it does go back to Boris Johnson was the first one to break the cardinal rule of Parliament and tell lies. Intentionally, you know, as a tactic, which is the same as Putin. I mean, he tells lies as policy. So, I mean, at this stage, I think it's worth actually reading what Karl Popper said about conspiracy theories. And he says, a very influential philosophy of the kind I have in mind is the view that when something bad happens in society, so that people dislike, such as war, poverty, unemployment, then it must be the result of some bad intention, some sinister design. Somebody has done it on purpose, and of course somebody profits from it. I've called this philosophy's assumption, philosophical assumption, the conspiracy theory of society. It can be criticized, and I think it can be shown that this is mistaken. There are many things that happen in society which are unintended and unforced, unforeseen consequences of our actions. Is the conspiracy theory of society is one of those many uncritical philosophies which create a need for critical investigation. They constitute, I think, an excuse for being a philosopher. These mistaken philosophies are influential, and somebody ought to discuss them and to criticize them. If you do not hold the same view as I, you must be dominated by some sinister economic motives. What is so bad about this kind of philosophy is that its acceptance makes serious discussion impossible.
A very astutely quoted, Graham. Thank you. I think we need a bit more philosophy in this sort of discourse, really, don't we?
Well, he puts it as the justification for being a philosopher.
Yeah.
The theory is that democracy is based on theories that you can criticize. If you can't criticize the theory, then it's not democratic.
He was, I suppose, writing, perhaps not fully anticipating how could he, the extent to which technology has taken over these processes, the runaway train of current events.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the uncontrolled...
Or apparently uncontrolled, yeah.
Yeah, destruction of civilization. No one can stop it. It's technology, it's progress. So you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And it's the only law that can stop it.
That's the circular argument, I suppose, of the Musk of this world, isn't it? You know, we've just got to ride the tiger.
Well,
What about
it's a
riding
bit
the tiger of
difficult
the Tory party this week? Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt the flow there.
Well,
Oh,
my
yeah.
word. Do you mean the Birmingham Tiger?
I suppose so, yes. Yeah. Of Birmingham.
It looks like James Cleverly seems to have ridden the tiger more successfully than the other three candidates for their leadership, to judge from the vox pops before their speeches and after their speeches. He seems to have swung the dial in his favour.
Conservatism with a smile, I think you said, if not a smirk.
I don't know about a smirk, but it's quite interesting because I think Jenrick and Badenoch went in as the sort of probable two favourites to get down to the last two. I think
Ever more astringent fruitcake sort of thing. Yeah.
Jenrick sort of disgraced himself by talking some arrant nonsense about the British Secret Service killing people rather than capturing them, which I don't think anybody has believed. Badenoch went off on some rant about maternity
The civil
leave.
service, wasn't it? Yeah.
And she wasn't quite talking about, I mean, I was quite shocked by it, so I actually listened to the clip. She wasn't quite talking about maternity leave, but she also was, because she was mainly, she comes at everything from very strange angles, to me anyway, and was talking about the impact of having to pay for extended maternity leave on small and medium enterprises, which, you know, to be fair, it is quite burdensome having to pay both maternity pay and also on top of that paying pay to someone to cover the gap in your in the staff. But you know, you need to factor that into your costings in any year that somebody might take maternity leave. But it was just the way that she's very heartless. You know, she's got no sympathy for anyone else. So, and that kind of came across, I think. And then I don't think her speech was very good. So I think, I don't know, we might see Jenrick and Cleverly get through to the last two when the MPs whittle them down rather than Jenrick and Badenoch. But you know, what do I know? I'm not a Tory. I
Of
think
Tugendhat as well, yeah. I
Tugendhat will be taken out next week because
yeah,
they
not
set
by
out.
Robert Jendrick with a revolver, though. No.
No, taken out of the contest, not taken
Oh,
out as
okay.
in, not as in assassinated. I'm not anticipating a by-election as a result of this. And then it will be down to those three, and I think possibly Cleverly might be getting to the last two now instead of Badenoch. But I
Do you
don't
think
know.
the yeah? Do you think the Labour Party, given that Rishi Sunak was apparently went off in a tremendous pomp to go and open a bakery in Sutton Coldfield in the midst of all this, do you think that the Labour Party is missing a relatively combative opposition? There's a lot of the big beasts including the Gavin Williams as well, and his slightly eerie focus on children's charities, apparently, in the future as a backbencher.
I
Bring back
mean,
the birch? No, surely not.
well, no,
Let's not go there.
the Tories made this decision to have an extended contest. And you know, they've done this both with a sort of shorter version of the contest and a longer version of the contest. I think it's up to them, but I don't think it matters at this point whether there's a, you know, whether it's Sunak facing Starmer across the dispatch box or not, because I mean they've only been in Parliament for a few weeks since the general election, because that was in early July, and then the House went into recess in late July, for the summer break during late July and all of August and the first part of September, came back for about a week or something, and then it's been the party conference season, ending with the Conservative Party conference this week. I mean, I think so. I don't think it's really mattered over because the House has hardly been sitting over the past few months since the general election. So, and they've got 5 years to
make their mark. So I think, missing a couple of weeks, I think if they'd finished the contest and voted and got someone, got their new leader in place by the end of October, that would probably be about the fastest that they could do it. And I think they're going to do it by November. So it's possibly slightly extended by a couple of weeks, but I don't think it matters because, it's still early days. And there's only been a few weeks of the house actually sitting. So
You make
no,
a very
I don't
useful
think it
point
matters.
there. I mean, in rather than be on that runaway train, let's give the whole process a chance, so to speak. Graham, what do you feel about this from a constitutional point of view? You with Leonie, that we'd need to let things take their course. And what about the fact that at the moment, with the Badenochs of this world and others, and I suppose also Jenrick, there is those who would say that the tilt to the right is still a valid gambit. And Farage is still worth courting, even though he claims to have none of it. And then there are those who would seek, as Mal might say, "Were we not unwell, get well soon now." The sensible middle ground, the One Nations.
One thing, the only thing I can remember of what they said, I heard Badenoch talk for the first time, and she made a very interesting point that people should be allowed to criticize other cultures or any culture, which is I agree with, and it's a very difficult thing to do. And it's the danger is using conspiracies that there is to do it. It's again a question of distinguishing, the right way to say something and the wrong way, and the way that does damage and the way that does harm.
So, I mean, I think you've got to the core of this because presumably, in terms of making this decision, it's the choices that were made around language and calling a spade when it is a spade that some people feel is being edged around or being, done conversely rather performatively.
Yeah, it's. I noticed the BBC have now made a promotional video of telling the truth, of being
Well,
warriors
some
for
people would
the
say
truth.
it's not always. How can I put this diplomatically? Sometimes with the allegation, shall we say, of Kunzberg being very friendly with Boris Johnson, for example, this wasn't always uniformly the case. But anyway,
Well,
we would.
the point is that it is all about telling the truth and how to tell the and how to get the truth across,
Yeah, seeking to certainly.
as opposed to falsehoods, which is the conspiracy theories. So, that's what it is all about. That's why Boris Johnson is so detested. Is he broke the fundamental rule.
If conversely, and this is what you're implying, I suppose, about Badenoch, is that she's seeking to be onto something. There's some thought going on there, however misjudged it might be, or how optically questionable it is happening.
Yeah, well, but there's the danger is that it's pounced on by the wannabe conspiracy theorists as the basis of some conspiracy, and the whole thing gets screwed up. I mean, that's the disaster that we're in the middle of is that the whole political process is being perverted, distorted. And so we're getting the wrong people elected.
Well, we can't have her because, she's a complete climate change denier. And one of the things that she said in her speech to their conference set was to say that she's going to declare a war on net zero and all the climate change warriors. So, I mean, she's just an absolute liar on that front. I mean, anybody who doesn't believe that there is now huge changes going on in terms of our climate is just a liar, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's just so blatant now, the changes to our climate and the impacts that man-made changes to the climate, things that we have done, human impacts on the planet. and it's just a nonsense to try and pretend that you don't believe that. But she is a warrior on that front, she declares herself.
And the optics of the Conservative Party are still the oak leaf, aren't they? And if I remember rightly, some it's changed colour over the years, but that
Think a
itself,
tree. I think it's a
that's a
tree.
torch now, isn't it? Yes,
No, I think it's a tree, not a
the
leaf.
tree. Sorry, not the leaf. I beg your pardon. It was the torch, then it was
But
the
you're
oak
right.
tree, as you say. Yeah.
It could be a fig leaf, couldn't it? Trying to
Good indeed. I think that's
cover up
probably
their
where
dreadfulness.
my warped mind was going. Yes,
Yes, it could
maybe
be
a
a fig
necessary one.
covering up their dreadfulness,
Yeah.
or not large enough to cover up their dreadfulness. Anyway, I mean, I'm as you know, not a fan of Kemi Badenoch, because having encountered her when we were both assembly members together, I think she's absolutely horrible. Really, really, really unbelievably personally unpleasant. But there we are.
More broadly, then, what about the Theresa May, who's just been elected to the well, elected, been admitted to the Lords, hasn't she? And ladies, historically talking about the nasty party, where does nasty meet, I suppose, what some people might say is necessarily abrasive at times? Are there going to be matters of degree, or are we still talking about, in diplomatic political terms, a sort of delinquent teenager?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because in one sense, what Cleverly was saying was the same thing that Theresa May was saying, except, and I think he made them laugh and made them feel good about themselves, but at the same time was saying, we need to be the party of change, but we need to be doing it with a smile, and we need to, be approaching it that way, which was kind of what May was saying, if you think about it, that people have started to see us as the nasty party. Yeah, so I think there must be something in that. There certainly are people that see them as the nasty party, that's for sure. And but Labour actually hasn't particularly needed an opposition over the last few weeks for quite a lot of people to start to see some of the people in the centre of the Labour Party as also being nasty people around things like the two-child benefit cap and the winter fuel allowance, because that's, making those decisions when you're in government about things like that does lead people very quickly to say, point the finger and say, nasty party, you're not helping people that need help. But
Irrespective of
so
what alternative measures might be down the pipeline, it's the fact that they're not, it's not immediately obvious, is it?
Well, we're going to find out on the budget day, aren't we? So at the
Yeah.
end of this month, we'll find out what other measures might be taken by Rachel Reeves to continue the process of possibly turning Labour into the nasty party. I mean, I hope not, but it's when you're in government, you have to make decisions, and sometimes the decisions that you make are unpopular. It's like running, government in London and deciding that you're going to put up TfL's fares, or that you're going to put up the mayoral precept, and charge more because you want more money coming in to pay for the police and the fire brigade. People want more police, but when you say, and to have more police, we're going to put up your council tax. They want the more police, but they don't want the increase in the council tax. There you go.
Yeah, and that was the USP of Wandsworth Tories for 40 years, wasn't it? Before that immense sea change, and now the 14 years sea change where.
Well, it hasn't been the USP for 40 years, because
I beg your pardon.
only since 1990, because obviously from 1978 to 1990, you didn't have council tax. And on many occasions from 1978 to 1990, they used to decrease it massively in an election year, and then the following year they put it
What a
up by,
coincidence. Yeah.
they put it they used to put it up by 50%, until Eric Pickles put a stop to all of that and basically said to all councils, if you want to raise your council tax by more than 3% in any year, you need to hold a referendum. And then they had the cap effectively was put on. I mean, the Labour Council has done the same thing, though. It's hasn't raised the council tax since he got in. That's 3 years. It's frozen it now, so it's no different. 2 years,
Thanks for reminding us. That's such an eloquent point, isn't it, about our culture? And I suppose a sort of Overton window whereby Starmer is dealing with the finances that he was bequeathed. There are varying views as to the actual nature of the deficit. But Graham, what's your thought on where we're going with this at the moment?
Yeah,
The
well,
Overton window and the potentially nasty Labour Party.
that principle of asking council taxpayers how they want their tax is the basis of Haringey and Moseley versus Haringey. Is also the basis of why we should revoke Brexit. It's all about the question of how you put things. It's procedural as well as substantive, so to speak.
So it's
So I
about a
think
series of appropriate and accountable revenue flows. And in your view, the idea of cutting some of these off constitutionally has these kinds of effects.
Well, no, it's just the point I'm making is how you do something. You have to do it. It's a big difference, all the difference, how you say something. And this is the politician's skill,
Yes,
presumably,
where it applies, yeah.
which is why it's so important to listen to the debates that they have, is to actually how they say something. It's
And
very
thereby,
interesting.
what the implications are, which they may or may not realize at the time.
Yeah, it's very curious. Did you see the Vance versus Morse debate?
I didn't, but Advance appear is thought to have won this, just by being able to stay awake, I suppose. What did you make of that?
Well, he won it by lying. I mean, he's the best liar.
Yes,
I
but
mean,
that was how we did it, is your point, yeah?
yeah, exactly. That's the way he fooled the electorate. He's just fooling the electorate. He's trying to persuade the electorate that Trump does is good for the country, and he's going to achieve all these wondrous things. That's the tactic of populism. And you had someone who's trying desperately to get to the truth of something, which is, I think, Waltz is a sincere person, and he was taken aback by when it was pointed out that he misspoke as well. And so it was all about he made a more or less a slip of the tongue, and he's been hauled up for it many
Rather
years
like
later.
sausages.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, it was a different kind of he a misstatement.
More impactful.
But of
The
course,
people will say, won't they, what's this going to play like on the public square?
yeah, it's how Vance was getting away with it. I mean, and when
Harvard debater.
he was asked, how do you justify the insurrection on January the 6th? He simply didn't answer the question. He went off and talked about something else. But
Basic cat ladies.
in a very non-controversial way. I mean, he didn't deny anything, and that was his whole lie, if you like, is the way he presented it, everything as purely rational and reasonable.
Leonie, do you think that Liz Cheney could swing it for the Democrats, or is it still too close to call? What's your impression of Vance as a political operator? Is he the brains on the operation?
Leonie?
You there?
I'm on mute.
Sorry about
I don't think Liz Cheney and other Republicans, and there are other Republicans apart from her who are supporting Kamala Harris because they're disgusted with Trump and disgusted with Vance as well. I don't think they'll swing it for the Democrats. I think it's going to be bigger issues that will swing it either for or against the Democrats. And yeah, I do think it's very close to call. I've got a friend who's over there at the moment, helping the Democrats. And is saying, that Trump could win just because of mishandling of this. There's been a tropical cyclone or hurricane has just made landfall in the States, and apparently some of the cleanup has been badly handled, and they're blaming Biden for that. I mean, they are very keen to blame. I mean, after eight years, 4 years of Biden, incumbency is both a blessing and a curse.
And in the midst of, dealing with various other crises, up comes a natural disaster, particularly in America. It's so prone to them, isn't it?
Well, and particularly because of the way that the climate has changed,
Oh,
yeah.
indeed.
So the more, storms on the East Coast and coming up from the Caribbean that make landfall anywhere from New Orleans, Florida, anywhere along that coast, they can be very violent these days. I mean, if Katrina wasn't a wake-up call when it hit New Orleans, I don't know what would be. But there are, obviously Trump is also a climate change denier, along with Kemi Badenoch and various other people. And we all know it just comes down to six or seven states in the US. So, if Kamala Harris can win the vote in Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Wisconsin, or Michigan, or Georgia, or North Carolina, there's only six or seven places where the vote moves around. And then there's these, Nebraska does it differently from all the others, and they actually have their electoral colleges broken up according to various little bits of Nebraska. And there's one bit, most of it's Republican, but there's one bit, District 6 or something, that sometimes votes Democrat. So it comes down to literally thousands of people out of the millions and millions and millions of Americans. It just comes down to a handful of thousands of people who will make the difference between whether it's Trump or Harris. And in most, if you look at most of the polls, the poll trackers just show them neck and neck. Well, that's better than it was when it was Biden who was the candidate, because he was clearly several percentage points behind, beyond the margin of error. But they are now so close in the polls in several of these states that it's within the margin of error. So nobody can call it at the moment still. I mean, I know that everybody outside, well, most people outside of America find it astonishing, the idea that Trump, anyone in their right mind could vote for Trump. But, clearly, he appeals to some Americans. He appeals to me about as much as after I finish cleaning up after my dog, that I would sit down and consume it. I mean, I just think he's unbelievable and hideous, but there we are.
That's the land of canned chicken, isn't it, after all? And
In fact, I'd rather sit down and consume what I've cleared up after my dog than vote for Donald Trump. Not that I have a vote,
well,
obviously.
that's a testament to your wonderful powers of animal husbandry. But the untamed orangery is a different kettle of fish, not to mention the sofas. Anyway,
Anyway, so, sorry to be so repulsive, but
not at all. You're telling it like it is. You've arrived to sing the blues.
I find Trump repulsive. I just really, really find him unbelievably repulsive. So that is why I'm unfit to be the Prime Minister of our country, because I know that Keir Starmer has just had to sit down and deal with him. So yeah, it's really difficult walking the world stage, because you actually have to go and be nice to some of these people, don't you? I think, didn't David Lammy have to eat his words over a few
Well, just his words anyway, yes. Yeah.
just his words. I think he said some fairly outspoken things about a few world leaders that he's now had to sort of wind back from, so that he can sit down and talk to them. But honestly, Kira's just been over there and had to sit down with him. So, oh, what a revolting idea.
Well, he wants that soldier. I suppose what Lammy is saying is a testament to the fact that we do have a measure of free speech and free agency at the top of government. You wanted to talk about well, it's climate change related stories, Leonie. It's been this week has been the closure of the last traditional blast furnace in Port Talbot, and also the last coal-fired power station. Apparently, there was one in 1882 constructed, but in Holborn to address the local urban infrastructure, early street lighting, and now it's all gone.
I think it's really interesting, isn't it? You know, I think we were the first country to start this plague of industrialization using coal, for
Going
all
for growth,
these.
as somebody said. They still say, don't they? Yeah.
But we're now the first country in the world with an advanced economy, as they call it, that's managed to get rid of all of its coal-fired power stations, which I think is incredible. I actually thought Germany might get there before us, but then they've kind of seemed to have gone in small circles for a variety of reasons over there, because they suddenly became very anti-nuclear, and so I
Yes.
think they got more concerned over closing down their nuclear power stations rather than closing down their coal-fired power stations, which I have to say I think is a mistake. And I know if Malcolm was on the call that he would strongly endorse that and wax lyrical about nuclear, but I'm not Malcolm, so I'm not quite going to do that. But I think it's an amazing step forward for us that we've managed to do that. And closing the blast furnace, I think it's a real shame that the previous government hasn't been working with the people that own these steelworks, which I think is Tata, who own both the one in Port Talbot and the one in the
Vast
north.
Indian company, as well, yeah.
And in the northeast, we should have been much further down the road of being able to replace those processes with the making of green steel with much less carbon intensive processes, instead of which we've had to close it, and then there'll be a gap before I think it's 3 years before the new green steel plant will be able to be opened, which I think is a real shame. And I don't quite know what impact that's going to have on employment in Port Talbot.
I think with the old furnace going, some 2,800 jobs will go permanently, but then there'll be the hiatus while
I
I
know.
don't suppose people are going to be retained for 3 years, are they?
No, I don't see how. So that's a real mistake on the part of the previous government not to have moved more quickly, so that work with Tata so that this hiatus didn't happen. And that's when people are talking about a transition from one type of jobs into another. That's why it's so important to be thinking ahead. And that's why the previous government doing things like saying, "Oh, everyone, by 2030, you won't be able to buy gas boilers. It's all got to be heat pumps." And then saying, "Oh, we've moved the goalpost from 2030 to 2035," and then doing the same with cars. And, "Oh, you won't be able to buy any new petrol or diesel cars. It'll all be electric." And then moving the goalpost from saying 2030 to 2035. That's why industry was so fed up with them, and that's why it was such a stupid thing to do. But hopefully, whatever their other trials and tribulations of the government might be in the optics, I don't think have been good around winter fuel payments versus Keir Starmer this week, repaying 6,000 quid's worth of hospitality and gifts. I mean, that's astonishing. You know, that's a half of a pension. You know, the pension's only about £12,000 a year, for goodness sake. It's quite, that is just a lot of people are quite cross about all of that, I have to say. Oh,
Sort of
certainly.
Primrose Hill effect, isn't it? You walk on sort of gilded grass up there.
It's not helpful. It's not a good look to be taking money away from pensioners at the same time as people are shoveling loads of gifts and hospitality towards people who are at the centre of the public eye. It's not a good look.
It's a little odd, isn't it? I mean, I dare say it was fair. It's relatively common over the past 14 years if you dig in deeply enough.
Well, but except that most of the Conservatives, I mean, Rishi Sunak doesn't need to accept gifts and hospitality because he's worth about
Well, he's on a
Fine.
retainer from this bakery in Sutton Coldfield, isn't he, for one thing? He'll
He's
never be short of a vegan sausage roll.
worth about 500 million quid, isn't he? Or something, or is it 800 million quid? I mean, the figures are just so
Chicken feed, as somebody said.
the figures are so
I
large,
think
I can't be. I mean, that's what they say, isn't it? That the Tories are done in by sex scandals, and Labour is done in by money scandals. I mean, that's what they traditionally say. But I think they need to sort themselves out. Even if it's all within the rules of gifts and hospitality, somebody needs to talk about the optics of the whole thing, and it's not been very good.
I think
Not
as
very
ever
good.
deftly, you have put your finger on something very, very important in our culture, sociopolitically, and about the way we think. And I suppose the misjudging of the way the public thinks these days, or the misapprehension, or the not noticing of it. What does that also apply to the things like green steel, Graham? Terms of how a culture of someone like Paul Talbot, as with the North of England after in the wake of the closure of the mines, after the perhaps dubious be handled miners' strike, as some would say, how that is remade and how the public is engaged.
Well, entirely. The world is failing to stop it itself going extinct. It's not fulfilling all its promises and commitments. It's made to stop emitting pollution, and
But does that
it has.
also include stopping people losing their livelihoods in one fell swoop
And
as a
that's the
culture?
procedural point is how you do it. It's always been pointed out how the Japanese look after their workers far better than the English. You sign up to a company for life, and they if they haven't got a job in one thing, they train them to do something in another.
Only if they're bloke. Only if they're bloke.
Really, yes.
Only they're bloke, but it's the principle I was pointing to,
Only if they're. Well, I'm not a
not the
bloke. I'm
practice.
not a bloke, Graham. So, go to Japan, see how they treat women, and then come back and say what you just said.
That is an extraordinary revelation, because all the Japanese women I meet, and there are not many, I will give you, seem to have had some sort of very successful educational grounding, no doubt through their own graft and determination. But then you think about where they're going to get to with this. That's quite a damning indictment, isn't it?
And where have you met these Japanese women? Have you met them
Oh,
in
a colleague of
Japan?
mine's wife. I've done one or two bits of reporting for Riverside that have involved Japanese industry, I think.
But
Quite
over
a number of
here,
years ago, but not very much.
but they're not in Japan. Are they outside
We're
of?
not.
Okay, so what educated Japanese women are always desperate to do is leave, and that and they there's a whole brand of Japanese women who are in Japan who are called gaijin killer. Gaijin is a very rude Japanese word for anyone who's not Japanese. It means foreigner, but with slightly rude overtones or undertones. And they are desperate to find a non-Japanese man to go off with and leave Japan.
And they think, that that's their only option. It seems very chauvinist.
Well, it is their only option. I mean, if you
Yes.
go to Japan and you talk to people who work in Japanese companies, they're almost their entire staff are men at all echelons above secretary. And you see whole gangs of them leaving the office together, and they're men. And
That's.
sometimes they go to that part of town where they have little red lanterns hanging up
Oh, indeed.
outside. I mean, they do that as
A
little
large
gangs.
box of tea.
Yeah, little gangs of men going off together after work. I mean, it's unbelievably sexist, and the whole of their society is constructed for men. How many women are there in the Japanese parliament?
Blimey. Yes, you pull us up righteously pull us up short there. Something needs to be done about that.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. And Japanese women who've got, brains and want to have a life that is meaningful, leave Japan. That's what they have to do.
It sounds almost in terms of shades of The Handmaid's Tale, or the people's worst J.D. Vance nightmare, so to speak. So problems of
quite late.
chauvinism and, non-greening of society as well.
Yeah. I speak as a fully paid-up cat lady, of course.
Gloriously so.
Also, dog lady. So,
Under your aegis, the cats and dogs will get along very nicely, I think, by and large.
well, so long as the dogs are not chasing the cat, yes.
Well, I suppose yes. I suppose that there, in a sense, this is a one would hope a benign sporting endeavour and a mode of exercise that, of course, can be reciprocated at any time when the whistle is blown.
Generally not. Generally, the cat runs and the dogs chase. They can run free on Tooting Common, but they're not allowed to chase the cat in the house.
Exactly. Now that is a question of corporate social responsibility, is it, in the canine world, and we need more of this in Japan, clearly.
Needs to be banned. And it often is,
It
because
is
they.
great, but presumably, Graham, you were apprised of the situation in Japan. I mean, if you were to go over there on some design mission, it's a question of choose your politesse, isn't it? As with Starmer this week and recently.
Well, I had a very enjoyable trip to Japan, ending up and going into a temple, escorted by ceremonially dressed young women who you could discuss anything you felt like discussing.
So that suggests a sort of rank of esteem, doesn't it? The fact that they do the ceremonial Shinto thing, then, but they can't quite be priests, presumably.
No, but they certainly had respect to the point of being goddesses. So, yeah, but the whole thing is just missing the point entirely about training workers to transition to prevent the world going extinct. And that is the current situation where we haven't managed to develop the language to talk about it or discuss it or to put it into practice. And things are getting worse and worse by the day.
Which
But
just says something, I suppose. Yeah, sorry.
I
Yeah.
think we're only right to celebrate the fact that we have closed down the, we are the first to close down the coal-fired power stations completely. And we're now half reliant on renewable energy. So I think we should praise the policy that we've managed to implement.
Yeah.
But in America, for example, they can't even discuss it in for the election because it would be a vote loser.
No, exactly. Which is why we don't want Kemi Badenoch as the leader of the opposition, because
Yeah.
otherwise, because we've just wasted a few years, because we've had a whole load of people in the Conservative Party who've been associated with the previous government who prevented this kind of discussion. And that's what's led to the problem at Port Talbot and the 3-year hiatus between the closure of one very carbon intensive way of making steel, and it's not been replaced by investment into a much less carbon intensive way of making steel that should have come on stream as the other plant was shut down. So it's really important that we have got a government now that I think are prepared to discuss it and move forward and are being very open about all the things that we need to do. But it is still going to be difficult because people do find change difficult, and they particularly find change difficult if you say you've now got no job and we're not quite ready to give you a new job in the new future. So, it's that transitional phase that's so important, isn't it? Which is why people talk about the just transition. Although I think that is another yet another expression like net zero that most people don't know what it means.
It is indeed. I mean, shades of the Rio Agreement, if I remember rightly. So we hopefully will come back to that sometime soon. Thank you both very much.
Pleasure.
Have a
Nice.
great
The other
weekend.
thing I mentioned
Get well
is
soon, Leo. Thank you very much for being with us today. And
thank
you too, Graham.
you.
Cheers.
Bye.